Welcome to eHealth Talk, a podcast from Health Informatics New Zealand and hosted by me, editor of eHealth News, Rebecca Macbeth. This podcast provides a regular roundup of news and views from across New Zealand's data and digital health sector. Please be sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Hello and welcome to eHealth Talk NZ. Thanks to InterSystems for sponsoring this podcast episode, where I'm joined by their Regional Director, Data Platforms, Andrew Aho, and Director, Customer Relations and Sales for New Zealand, Brian Biggs. Welcome to you both. So InterSystems recently completed a landmark study on analytics and interoperability in major healthcare providers, and you can find the link to that report. It's freely available in the description of this podcast. Brian, can you start by summarising what that study tells us about the state of digital health in New Zealand?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Rebecca. Thanks for having us along. So we went out and asked Ecosystem to conduct some really key research for us. They went out and asked 180 healthcare executives from across Australia and New Zealand. We asked people from large metro tertiary hospitals to small rural community care leaders and everyone in between. So we feel we got a pretty good representation of the market, which gives the results some real credibility. In summary, though, the major finding was that healthcare organisations are struggling with harnessing the power of their data. This was refreshing in a way, as these leaders weren't saying that they didn't have enough data or it wasn't a priority for the organisation, more just that they were struggling to really grasp the possibilities that unlocking that data could achieve for them.
Thanks. And Andrew, can you tell us what, for you, were the most important findings of the study?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Rebecca. Also, pleasure to be here. As Brian said, I think the kind of the key areas are certainly not that there's not enough data, and it really does come down to what we're able to do with that data to turn it into information and to into actionable insights that people can use. Obviously, the goal is at the point of care to change the course of an outcome for a patient. There were many findings. I'll just pick a few that I think were kind of the standout ones. A key one for me was that 78% of executives said that analytics was either one of the top five strategic initiatives or it was intrinsic to all strategic objectives. And so that's really good to see that, you know, there's this recognition that the data and use of that data can help us improve our organization and to help lead to improved clinical outcomes. And that sort of leads into the second point, which was another key finding, that executives are expecting these improved clinical outcomes, things like lowered risk and improved safety and better patient experience and so on. They're expecting these things from their analytics investments, but actually what they're seeing happen is that the money, the funding and the resources are going into other things. So it was reported that 64% are seeing compliance with government mandates as being the top area for spend around data and analytics. And cost optimization came in at number two with 46%, and improving clinical outcomes was third at 42%. So we are seeing some differences to what people are looking for as to where the funding is ending up. And another key area, which obviously is something that we have to work on, is that more than 50% of healthcare executives reported that they do not have full trust in their data. And that stems from a few key areas. One is 51% said there was a lack of data quality. 43% said that there was a lack of real-time data access. So obviously with data quality, that's an area that it's continuously ongoing and improving, but this aspect of data quality and trust really does need to be worked on. The real-time access, I guess my interpretation of this is that not so much about streaming data, but about having data at the point in time when I can use it to make a decision. And so either way you look at that, still not a great result. People are looking for more access to data in a timely manner to help improve decision making. So I think those are kind of the top findings from the study.
Yeah, really interesting. Be good to get a bit further into some of those topics later. But first, can you just tell us, why did InterSystems sponsor the study? I think you touched on it there, but why is it important to understand more about analytics and interoperability within healthcare organisations?
Yeah, look, I think we benefit from a lot of international research. There's certainly a lot that comes out of the United States and the UK in this area, but we felt it hadn't been done locally. And when we looked at it, actually, it really hadn't been a study of this kind, hadn't been done in over a decade. So it really was time to sort of dig in and understand where things were up to. As you said, I did touch on this, you know, one of the main drivers is we're seeing in healthcare, you know, the data opportunity is really incredible. The things you can do to improve patient care, to reduce the cost of care, the whole area around personalized medications, precision medicine, smart devices, sensors, hospital in the home. I think all of this really does depend very heavily on data. And so understanding where we're up to as an industry in Australia and New Zealand was very important to us. I also think that there's major challenges that we're looking to solve here, which unless you understand where we're up to, and we emphasize the importance of using data and analytics, we're just not going to be able to move the ball forward. So things like transition of care, shared care planning, hospital in the home, those are key areas where care itself crosses boundaries that data may not. And so if we don't get to the point where our data stops living in silos and the data can actually move with the care, then we're not going to see a lot of great progress in this area. The data silos don't just hinder progress, they actually work against you in trying to make these things happen. So those are the key reasons why we thought it was time to dig deeper in Australia and New Zealand on this topic.
Yeah, and Andrew, just to add to that also, part of the reason we thought it was really key that we sponsored it was that this wasn't us going out asking the market what they thought was really important. This was a professional firm ecosystem doing it. No one knew it was us sponsoring the research. And why that was important is because I think it gave people the chance to tell us what was really important. You know, often when you're networking, you're at a conference or talking to a customer, you know, there can be a tendency to try and talk to your themes and tell you what you're here to talk about. Whereas when we asked it, it wasn't a data interoperability study. These were the things that came out. And so I think that gives some real credibility and some real independence to the data. And that makes that, I think, a little bit more actionable.
Mm. Yeah. And so interesting, Andrew, were you describing about the care moving where perhaps the data doesn't. And, you know, in New Zealand, one of the five key shifts of our reforms is around moving care closer, you know, using digital technologies to move care closer to people's homes and communities. And like you say, yeah, how are we going to shift that dial if we don't have the data available? So I was interested because InterSystems is mainly known in New Zealand for the Track Care Patient Administration and Electronic Medical Record System. So why this focus on analytics and interoperability here, Brian, do you think?
Yeah, okay. There's probably a couple of parts to that. First, if you look at the EMR PAS landscape, you know, those systems can no longer be closed like they probably were one day traditionally. You know, the days of healthcare being driven from secondary care settings are probably well behind us. You know, even sharing basic PAS data is becoming more and more key for increasing engagement and outcomes in both primary and social health settings. So it's almost these days a hygiene factor for those types of systems that they can be open and interoperable. Additionally, kind of in the PAS EMR space, you know, we're working on a project at the moment in the region where a significant number of customer legacy analytics solutions, you know, home built dashboards and reporting, those solutions are being replaced with off the shelf embedded analytics in our software. So it's not only simplifying the technology stack for those customers, but also decreasing the time to value equation on those projects. So that's kind of the PAS EMR space. But more broadly at InterSystems here, our IRIS data platform is the foundation of everything we do. It's easily the biggest part of our business, where customers and partners drive their data journeys on our stack, usually without having any relationship with us in the EMR space. It's an engine that drives a significant percentage of the digital health records around the world. And that's a position I think that gives us great responsibility, a responsibility for building trusted access to that data. That's something that our partners and our partners' patients expect, really. They expect their data to be harnessed to support them on their healthcare journeys.
Yeah, you mentioned there about analytics solutions. What did the study tell us about the outcomes that providers expect from the analytics solutions? And was it different from what we might have expected?
I'm happy to pick that one up, Rebecca. So I touched on it a little bit before. I think the executives are looking for these investments to lead to true clinical outcomes and things that improve patient experience and safety and things like that. But the funding tends to end up in complying with government mandates and then cost optimization. And I don't think that's particularly surprising, but it is something that we do need to think about a bit. How can we improve in this area so that the ambitions to improve care actually are seeing the most investment and resources going into from a data and analytics perspective? There is a little bit of a clue in the research as well here that in a number of cases, data strategies were articulated as not being holistic and also rapidly becoming outdated. So the holistic piece is, you know, in a number of cases, in fact, it was only about 33% of the respondents who could actually say that their data strategies were linked to digital transformation. And so if you've got a data strategy that's, you know, that's getting money invested into it and people and resources, but it's not clearly linked to achieving organizational goals, you know, then you can find yourself delivering on a wonderful project, but really not moving the ball forward and improving what the organization is trying to achieve. The second part of that is data strategies rapidly becoming outdated. So this is probably no surprise. The data world, in terms of the techniques and procedures and technology and all the ways in which we've learned about managing data from when it's created, how we capture it, you know, through data pipelines, automation, governance, all these kind of areas, without even getting into kind of AI and ML, that is moving incredibly fast. Just keeping up with what's going on in that world is very, very hard. So there is certainly this element of, you know, I'd like to see my investment going towards other things, but I'm sort of struggling to keep up just with what's going on day to day in the data world.
Interesting. And what is, you know, given that that is a struggle, I'm sure New Zealand, Australia and globally, keeping up with technology is not something that's easy to do. So what's some solutions in that area? How can you, you know, keep your data strategies up to date or relevant? Do you have any thoughts around that?
One of the key things is to have a strong partnership with your vendor organizations and learn from them. I mean, Brian touched on this before. InterSystems has a very large footprint, over 1 billion electronic health records on our technology around the world, a responsibility, but certainly an opportunity to help organizations understand what are some of the best practices out there. What are some things that don't work? How can InterSystems and the team of people who do this each and every day, how can you help me understand where I'm up to? I think also data strategies, that just one point on the technology here is that for many years, we've focused on getting towards a centralized repository, you know, data warehouse and so on. And I think the days of saying, all right, guys, let's pause. We're not going to do anything, deliver any insights or value for 2 or 3 years whilst we get this central repository in place. Whilst that's still valid in some cases, people need to find insights. We need to move the organization and the business forward from today. So we do need to find hybrid ways and ways in our data strategy so that it evolves, but so that it can also be delivering value quickly and that time to results that Brian talked about happens from the get-go, really.
Thanks, Andrew. And it's interesting that compliance and risk reduction is such a common driver for analytics, even more common than patient outcomes or cost reduction. Do you think there is a lack of ambition here from health providers, Brian?
Yeah, this is a topic I've oscillated on a few times since the research came out. I was a little bit sad when I first read that that's what was the most important thing for executives. But then I was talking to a few people recently. I spoke on this at a conference in Auckland the other week, and it's important to understand that these are questions that we've asked executives. You know, so these are CDOs, CEOs, board chairs, the likes of those types of people. And compliance absolutely is critical, and restriction to those types of people. Have we spent too much time on that? My hope for the sector really in New Zealand is that once the reforms bed in, we'll see less of that. You know, I still remember the days not that long ago where we used to publish dashboards in newspapers ranking each of the 20 DHBs on a range of various different measures. I'd hate to know how much money was spent on formulating those reports, but surely some of that investment these days can go into more targeted objectives that get closer to patient care. To the ambition question, I don't think there's a lack of ambition in the data and digital community in New Zealand. You know, recently with you, Rebecca, we're at the HINS Leadership Summit in Wellington a few weeks ago, and there must have been 200 people in that shed for a couple of days who live and breathe the space. And the conversations were full of hope and objective, and there's a strong community of people out there trying to do this. So I think the challenge is how that community aligns a little bit more either with the compliance objectives or find tactical ways for engagement that kind of lay the groundwork for something bigger. I think it's unlikely we're going to go see large behemoth type projects that you might have seen, you know, in previous years. But additionally, also, I think this report hopefully provides some objective data points to some of those people who can use this information, use this report to help them get their initiatives either off the ground or keep the momentum up that they've got, which may have been lost over the last couple of months. And I think, Andrew, you've got some regional context on how they could do some of those things, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I totally agree with you. I think it's not a lack of ambition. We, yeah, very inspired by the landscape in New Zealand as well as in Australia and abroad as well. So we're really seeing a mix, I think, of the large and the small. So organisations that are doing, I don't know that they're behemoths, Brian, but there's certainly big investments going into this area around data and analytics. I think it's contextual, right? So in some areas that's appropriate, and in others, really the funding and the resources and the context that the organization finds themselves in is not quite there. So a couple of our government clients in Australia, I've been very impressed with, you know, statewide sort of interoperability and already on the InterSystems platform, and they are extending that with smaller, very targeted projects around data and analytics. So I think in that context, whilst they could be doing, you know, maybe some more of the larger projects, they're actually picking off areas that will deliver value, and they can deliver relatively quickly, you know, in a couple of months is the sort of time frame they're working on there. And we do have other clients thinking of a more of a startup organization. They're thinking about interoperability first and foremost, so that they can get more scale with their technology across the Australian and New Zealand market. But the conversation has come more about, this isn't just about interoperability, it's actually all about the data. So let's architect and design on InterSystems Iris for Health from day one, so that when we're ready to start publishing that information, publishing the analytics, it's all really there, ready to go. It's embedded and part of the solution from the design phase. So, yeah, I think there's lots of ambition quite inspired by what's going on and a range of different approaches as to how to actually progress in this area.
Yeah, I mean, those quick wins are so important, aren't they, for sort of proving value and bringing people along on the journey with you. So, and I know that Te Whatu Ora Health New Zealand's keen to get some of those in the first couple of years as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in that space in New Zealand. Looking at the technical challenges for analytics, data quality appears to be the number one problem. So I understand you also looked at the top business challenges for analytics adoption, and I was wondering, what did you find out about those?
To talk about what we might classically think of as business challenges, it's the sort of things that everybody has been facing in recent times. The lack of sufficient IT staff was the highest at 64% of respondents saying this was a challenge for them. 58% said struggling to secure budget, and 54% saying finding it difficult to get staff who have that mix of both the clinical and the technical or analysis skills. So I think there's those kind of challenges have probably gotten a bit worse in recent times, but certainly common challenges that people have been facing. Some of that may be resolved with strong data leadership. We've lived in this world where as engineers and technologists, we've got plenty of doctors and clinical staff on the team at Ender Systems. And so we're practiced, I guess, at speaking the language of both healthcare and technology. But I think data requires very much the same. People who can communicate about data with clinical staff can communicate about how do you communicate a data fabric or a data warehouse strategy or a data lake or whatever to a chief medical officer. You know, what's relevant in that discussion to help a chief medical officer understand how any of this is actually going to help them improve the organization. So I think that element of data leadership is growing and improving, but certainly has a big impact on how we address some of those business challenges that people were responding to.
Yeah, interesting what you mentioned there about workforce. I mean, that's a bit of a perennial problem, isn't it, Brian? I imagine New Zealand struggling with that as much, many countries around the world are.
Yeah, and I think it's only getting worse. You know, I think the last 9 months has been not the greatest time in terms of not only attracting talent into this space, but also just retaining, you know, those people in the sector that have, you know, been with us 3, 5, 7 years who are, you know, whether it's because of COVID or because of changes that are happening, that people are starting to look outside the sector. And that makes it tough. It makes it tough when you're losing them and not being able to recruit them at the same time. So it's no wonder that there's a lot of pressure on a bunch of projects within organisations.
I was interested to know from both of you, what was the most surprising result from the study and why?
Sure. I think at the beginning of the podcast, I shared that 78% of respondents were saying that analytics is either part of every strategic priority or it was in the top five. That to me is fantastic progress, and I love to see that confirmed in this research. I also appreciated the fact that more and more non-traditional data sources are being tapped into, whether they're unstructured you know, text like information or smart devices, biomedical devices, bedside monitors. That whole area seems to be getting a lot more traction in recent times, and I thought that was pretty interesting to come out of the study. But maybe another one, which I really wasn't expecting, was this topic of data fabrics. There was a 74% of respondents thought that a data fabric would either be of value in the future or were evaluating a data fabric today. And that to me was very surprising. I would have thought that this was perhaps a bit more early days in terms of people's understanding of the value of a data fabric, but very good to see that. And if you're not sure of what a data fabric is, probably the easiest way to think about it is it's really that cloth that you weave across your organizational data assets. It's less disruptive. It allows you to tap into lots of different data sources with the primary goal of being able to generate actionable insights. So you take the information from where it is, get it to where it needs to be, and obviously ideally in this context is to make a difference at the point of care. So that was a big surprise. I didn't think people were that optimistic, I guess, about the promise of data fabrics. Brian, did you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I'll jump in with a pessimistic one then, just because I can. And it was one of the ones we put on the front page of the report, or close to it, that only 7% of respondents were happy to continue with their existing interoperability environment. That's a staggeringly low number, especially when you can consider how critical everyone said what they're doing is. So, a lot of opportunity in there to add value and bring tools to the table that can help in that space.
Yeah, I mean, it is apparent that healthcare providers face some formidable challenges with analytics and interoperability, Brian. So what implications does that have for the government's HERA National Health Information Platform?
Yeah, okay. Well, there's a bit to unpick, as there often is with HERA. Ultimately, I think the strategy is the right one around building, you know, an information as a service model. I see HERA almost as a North Star, really, for the sector around where we want to be heading. and kind of putting a purpose behind the mahi and the hard work that we're all doing in this space. There are some tactical challenges, which I think are starting to come to light, especially around data mobility. It's great to have, you know, this objective, but still as a sector, we're struggling a little bit with sharing data within organization walls. So as soon as you start moving outside of those walls and outside even the traditional health boundaries, a number of those challenges that stop you sharing it within your organization become exaggerated and more profound. The other challenge, I think, is going to be how the governance model supports, you know, the widespread effect that the innovation, balancing the kind of the overarching objective with the innovation and getting things done locally. You know, we've talked a bit already on this podcast about trying to find ways to add incremental value. I think it's going to be key that the program manages, finds a way to manage both objectives. But I think more strategically, you've heard Andrew talk a couple of times around trust. Trust in the information or data being shared is going to be fundamental to the community that ultimately consume the HERA outputs. Data lineage is going to be critical to that as well, and respecting the source of truth of where the data has been created is going to be a key lever to build out that trust. Personally, I think, well, I know that the tech is there, especially when it comes to interoperability. The big challenge is potentially getting commitment to interoperability. Only a few years ago, it was more of a case of, can we do this? Now it's becoming increasingly, why should we do this in some corners? And that's frustrating and possibly even a little bit disappointing.
I mean, Andrew, the technology story around analytics and interoperability, generally, what you've said today sounds relatively positive, but how do you as a technology provider deal with the business challenges that providers face?
I think Brian said it well there. From a technology perspective, we know that these things can be resolved, but it's a very positive story in my view. But the business challenges, you can't solve one without addressing the other, obviously. We've talked about it a little bit, but the position that InterSystems has in the market with the number of organizations that we work with and our focus in this area over many, many years means that we're a good partner to have, a good vendor to talk to. You know, we ourselves, you know, from the very top, believe that long-term partnerships are required for success in this area, and we love building the community and the culture and the strength around those long-term partnerships. And so what does that mean? Well, we like to get involved in the early stages where these, how do we resolve these technology and business issues? We want to be part of that conversation, and we have a lot to contribute. You know, we have been focused on our partner program so that we can offer some of those skills we talked about not being as available. Our partners can bring those skills to the market and help our customers be successful in addressing that business problem as well. We have revamped our training program. You know, we're involved in standards organizations. And I think just overall, InterSystems is really putting a lot of thought and effort into how do we help understand first and foremost what the business challenges are, and then how do we contribute to that. Obviously, the strong focus on engineering, having great technology, that's something that we will continue to do. But I think there is a wider set of offerings that are available from a partnership with InterSystems that help address some of these business challenges as well. And perhaps, Brian, I know you're working on this with a number of New Zealand organisations. Have you got some local context you could add?
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. I think for the first time in many years, the challenges that we face in the vendor community are actually aligned with that of our customers and partners. You know, we talked about resourcing. It's a challenge for us. It's a challenge for our customers and partners. You know, the reforms that have gone on have created, you know, uncertainty and possibly even anxiety on both sides, the vendor and the provider. Okay, so I think we're actually much closer to some of the pain points than traditionally you might have been 3 or 4 years ago. The issues around mobility and how you engage people. You know, you hear about, you know, the gig economy and how you can keep people working, keep them engaged, keep them motivated while, you know, they may be working from home, they may be working part time. I think those are all real things. The other real challenge in this space, I think, will be how we evolve around data. Kind of to summarize it, the report has lots of great insights, data points, and commentary. It's not been delivered as a go and buy InterSystems piece of collateral. That's not why we sponsored this. You know, we sponsored this survey, this study, and we're sharing it because we strongly feel that analytics and interoperability are going to be the key drivers that help the sector locally to evolve. Data and analytics really is part of our DNA here at InterSystems, and it's my personal desire that people can use this report to help support their initiatives and innovations in the space, like I mentioned earlier. Lastly, like my hope is that should we do this report again in a few years' time, that some of the needle shifted really, some of those things that we're talking about as being opportunities to improve, that they have really shifted to the positive. And I guess that's my challenge really to the community. You know, what can we all be doing each day that increases trust in data and enables the true power of all this great data to be harnessed to deliver better outcomes?
Great. Well, thanks for ending our discussion on that great challenge and vision for the future there, Brian. And thank you to both of you for joining me today. It's been a fascinating discussion. Thanks to InterSystems for sponsoring this podcast episode and for sponsoring the report, which you are making freely available. Listeners can see a link in the description of this podcast. You can go to intersystems.com to find it. And Andrew and Brian are both kindly said you're also welcome to reach out to them on LinkedIn if you want to discuss it further. So to our listeners, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. And if you can take the time to review it, please do so, as that makes it easier for other people to find. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to eHealth Talk. Be sure to subscribe and share with your colleagues and friends. eHealth Talk, eHealth News and the eHealth TV webinar series are supported by Health Informatics New Zealand. See hins.org.nz for more information and become a member starting at just $17 a month.
We also have affordable organisational membership options now for both our industry partners and healthcare providers.